So today, as we continue with our coverage of the life and reign of the righteous young King Josiah, we're going to begin in 2 Kings chapter 23. So please be turning there. 2 Kings chapter 23. And we're going to begin with what some Bible scholars believe to be Josiah's further reformations that he put into place in addition to those that he'd already put into the place, which we covered last time in 2 Chronicles chapter 34. But today I'd like to start off on 2 Kings chapter 23. 2 Kings chapter 23. And I feel, even though some scholars, like I said, Bible scholars, believe that they were additional reformations, I feel that at least some of this is repetition of events that we've already covered. But let's read through it anyway and see, because I feel that there is more. Let's see if there's anything else we can learn from this particular parallel account. So 2 Kings chapter 23, and let's begin in verse 4. And the king commanded Hilkiah, the high priest, and the priests of the second order. So these second order priest brethren, they were another rank of priests that had been inserted between the high priest and the regular priest. So I guess they were like the equivalent of the deacons of today, who would be inserted between the ministry and the brethren, not that they would serve as intermediaries or mediators. You know, we only have one mediator between us and God the Father, and our only mediator is Jesus Christ. But we will see one other reference to these second level priests later on in today's study, but also we read about them also in many other Old Testament and New Testament scriptures, even more in the New Testament, where they're called chief priests, you know, and there's multiple chief priests that we find in the New Testament. Okay, still in verse 4 here though, and the keepers of the door, keepers of the doors, the gates of the temple, and we would consider them, we'd call them bouncers, to bring forth out of the temple of the Lord all the vessels that were made for Baal and for the grove and for all of the host of heaven, the heathen, idolatrous host of heaven. And he burned them outside of Jerusalem in the fields of Kidron and carried the ashes of them unto Bethel. Now Bethel is in the territory of the old idolatrous northern Israelite tribes, where one of the golden calves of their first evil king, Jeroboam, had been set. And that golden calf was one of the major sources of the idolatry of the northern Israelites. So Josiah did all of the destruction, and he did it in utter contempt of that place in Bethel, to show his loathing of all the idolatry that had been committed there. Verse 5, and he put down, this is Josiah, put down the idolatrous priests. And when it says put down, I think of, you know, we find out later that he did have them executed. And I, you know, when it says put down, I look at that as perhaps as we would have a diseased animal put down, you know. So he put down these idolatrous priests whom the kings of Judah, you know, the former evil kings of Judah, had ordained to burn incense in high places in the city of Judah in the places round about Jerusalem, them also that burned incense unto Baal, to the sun, and to the moon, and to the planets, and to all the host of heaven. And this action brings back to my memory, brethren, the very reverse of this being done. Back in the 90s, the 1990s, the nullification of God's true holy seventh-day Sabbaths and holy days, and the gradual adoption of Sunday, and Easter, and all of the other heathen holy days now. And that was done by the apostate Worldwide Church of God leadership back in the 1990s. Verse 6, and he, Josiah, brought out the grove, and the Hebrew for grove here is Asherah, the Asherah. And that was a heathen tree, perhaps like a Christmas tree, or perhaps like a pole, perhaps like a totem pole. Read about that again in more detail in Jeremiah chapter 10. And he brought out the grove from the house of the Lord. He had it brought outside Jerusalem onto the brook Kidron. And the Kidron Valley was one of Jerusalem's garbage dumps at the time. And Josiah burned it at the brook Kidron and stamped it small to powder and cast the powder thereof upon the graves of the children of the people. The people, those who had participated in such foul idolatries. Verse 7, and he, Josiah, broke down the houses of the Sodomites. The Sodomites, the Hebrew for Sodomites is Kadesh, Q-A-D-E-S-H, Kadesh, Sodomites. He broke down the houses of the Sodomites that were by, in other words, next to the house of the Lord, where the women wove hangings for the grove. It's hard for us to imagine this happening, brethren. Let's just take a look at these Sodomites, brethren. And of all of the Bible reference books that I have access to, there's one called Smith's Revised Bible Dictionary, that is very concise and gives the most complete description of who and what these Sodomites were. Let me just read it to you. Sodomites. This word does not denote the inhabitants of Sodom, nor their descendants, but is employed in the Old Testament of the King James Version for those who practiced as a religious rite the abominable and unnatural vice from which the inhabitants of Sodom and Gomorrah have derived their lasting infamy. And we all know what that is, don't we, brethren? He continues, this dreadful desecration was spread in different forms over Phoenicia, Syria, Phrygia, Assyria, and Babylonia. Ashtaroth, the Greek Astarte, in other words, Easter, was its chief object. Was the reason they did this stuff in worship of these heathen gods. It appears also to have been established at Rome. Please notice that, brethren, Rome, where its victims were called Galli, G-A-L-L-I, from the river Gallus in Bithynia. Continuing now still in Smith's Revised Bible Dictionary, the translators of the Septuagint, which is a Bible version, with that anxiety to soften and conceal obnoxious expressions, which has been often noticed as a characteristic of that version, have, in all cases but one, avoided rendering Kadesh, the Hebrew Kadesh, by its perceived meaning. And again, brethren, we all know what that is. Continuing in Smith's, There is a feminine equivalent to Kadesh, namely Kadeshah, that's Q-A-D-E-S-H-A-H, and that's translated in the New King in the King James Version as harlot or whore, and Smith there gives a bunch of scriptural references where we read that. In each of these cases, it throws a new light on the passage to remember that these women, okay, in the female version of Kadesh, these women were, if the expression may be allowed, the priestesses of a religion, not playing for hire or merely instruments for gratifying passing lust. Such ordinary prostitutes, he says, are called by the name Zona, but these Sodomites of verse 7 that we just read, they were male temple prostitutes. Ah, you know, is all I can say. Ah, well, let's not dwell on that disgusting abomination, brethren. Let's move on. Verse 8. And he, Josiah, brought all the priests out of the cities of Judah and defiled the high places where the priests had burned incense from Geba to Beersheba. In other words, from the north to the south of Josiah's kingdom. And broke down the high places of the gates that were in the entering in of the gate of Joshua, the governor of the city. It just seems, brethren, that these wicked kings before Josiah, that they built these things, they'd had these things built in loads of different places, you know, and they put them, you know, right inside the Lord's temple, and they put them outside the Lord's temple, you know, right next door, and they put them in the gates of the city and the gates of the temple, you know. Let me just read that bit again. And broke down the high places of the gates that were in the entering in of the gate of Joshua, who was the governor of the city. He would have been like the mayor, I guess, the mayor of the city, which were on a man's left hand at the gate of the city. Verse 9, nevertheless, the priests of the high places came not up to the altar of the Lord in Jerusalem. And the indication here, brethren, and I previously suspected this in when we were going through our Bible study last week, is that these priests might have been, or at least some of these heathen priests might have been Aaronic priests who, as we might express it, had gone over to the dark side. Gone over to the dark side during the reigns of the previous wicked kings of Judah. Similar, again, brethren, if you don't mind me bringing it up, similar perhaps to the many worldwide Church of God ministers who did something similar during the infamous apostate regime of that organization in the 1990s. Still in verse 9. But they did eat of the unleavened bread among their brethren, okay, implying that the spring holiday season was soon to be upon Judah, as we're going to see. And just like now, brethren, we're in preparation for the autumn or the fall holiday season. At this time, this was just before the spring holiday season, the time that we're reading of here. But before that spring holiday season, there was more cleansing work to be done. Cleansing work. Verse 10. And he, Josiah, defiled Topheth, place which means place of fire, which is in the valley of the children of Hinnom. We read that in other parts of the Bible as a place called Gehenna, and it's translated hell in some scriptures. Gehenna is the valley of Hinnom, which is the valley of the children of Hinnom, that no man might make his son or his daughter to pass through the fire to Molech anymore, right? By defiling these places, Josiah had their formerly important status severely downgraded and reduced to nothing, like these during the reigns of the previous evil kings. These places were important. They looked upon these terrible places as being holy, but now the righteous Josiah had them reduced to nothing and less than nothing. And he did that by making these disgusting places totally unclean and impure. And again, having them ground to powder and thrown into the city's garbage dumps. Verse 11. And he took away the horses that the kings of Judah had given to the son at the entering in of the house of the Lord. Again, brethren, they did these things. They virtually slapped the Lord God in the face by doing these terrible things right outside and even inside of his temple. By the chamber of Nathan Melech, the chamberlain, which was in the suburbs. So it talks about at the entering in of the house of the Lord and the suburbs. Well, God's temple was not in the suburbs. What this seems to mean was that these horses, these heathen horses and their chariots had formerly been put into some unrighteous heathen service across a large extent of the city of Jerusalem, all the way from the temple, all the way out to the suburbs. Verse 11, or still in verse 11, and burned the chariots of the son with fire. Verse 12, and the altars that were on the top of the upper chamber of Ahaz, which the kings of Judah, the former unrighteous kings of Judah, had made, and the altars which Manasseh, Josiah's grandfather, had made, but had failed to destroy after his repentance, in the two courts of the house of the Lord. Again, brethren, right inside the courts of God's temple, did the king beat down and broke them down from thence and cast the dust of them into the brook Kidron. And the high places that were before Jerusalem, which were on the right hand of the Mount of Corruption, not sure where that was, which Solomon, the king of Israel, brethren, had builded for Ashtoreth, the abomination of the Zidonians, and for Chemosh, the abomination of the Moabites, and for Milcom, the abomination of the children of Ammon, did the king Josiah defile. It's hard to believe that Solomon, after such a good start, lowered himself to start worshipping along with his heathen wives all of these horrible places. He started off good, and he just turned again to the dark side. Verse 14, and he, Josiah, broke in pieces the images, cut down the groves, and filled their places with the bones of men. Just want to jump down just temporarily, brethren, just to continue the thought here. Jump down to verse 24. Okay. Moreover, the workers with familiar spirits, in other words, demons, and the wizards, and the images, and the idols, and all the abominations that were spied in the land of Judah and in Jerusalem, did Josiah put away, that he might perform the words of the law which were written in the book that Hilkiah the priest found in the house of the Lord. Brethren, one day in the future, our king the King of Kings, is going to have an even more severe extent of destruction put into effect on the many idolatrous heathen edifices that still exist in our nations today. But Isaiah hadn't finished yet, brethren. Let's go back to verse 15. Let's go back to verse 15 and continue there. Verse 15, moreover, additionally, the altar that was at Bethel and the high place, which Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin, had made, both that altar and the high place, he, Josiah, broke down and burned the high place and stamped it small to powder and burned the grove. So Josiah extended this cleansing beyond his kingdom of Judah, way up into Samaria, into the city of Bethel in Samaria, the former kingdom of the northern tribes of Israel. Verse 16, and as Josiah turned himself, so he's up in Bethel now, he spied the sepulchres that were there in the mount. I'm not sure. I assume that the city of Bethel is up on a hill. So Josiah had arrived at the local cemetery of Bethel, up on that hill, where some of the graves were those of the idolatrous priests and worshippers who had chosen to be buried at the place of their idolatry. Still in verse 16, Josiah sent and took the bones out of the sepulchres and burned them upon the altar and polluted it according to the word of the Lord. This is interesting, brethren. According to the word of the Lord, which the man of God proclaimed, who proclaimed these words. What words, brethren? What words? And who was this man of God? And when we first read that, brethren, we might get the impression that this man of God, and by the way, brethren, this man of God is never actually named, but on first reading, we might get the impression that this man of God had just turned up at this hilltop cemetery in Bethel, and that he now had a new message for Josiah and his cleansing workers. But no, these words were prophesied 300 years prior to Josiah's reign. 300 years prior to Josiah's reign. During the reign of the evil Jeroboam, who was the first of all of the wicked kings of the northern kings of tribes of Israel. Please bookmark 2 Kings chapter 23. We're going to come back there, brethren. I just want to quickly review this astonishing prophecy, and you'll see how dead on, right on, so accurately that this prophecy was fulfilled. So again, please bookmark 2 Kings chapter 23 and turn all the way back to 1 Kings chapter 13. 1 Kings chapter 13, beginning at verse 1. 1 Kings chapter 13, verse 1. And behold, there came a man of God out of Judah by the word of the Lord unto Bethel. And Jeroboam stood by the altar. Jeroboam had built this altar to burn incense. And he, the man of God, cried against the altar in the word of the Lord and said, O altar, altar! Thus says the Lord, behold, a child shall be born unto the house of David, Josiah by name, and upon you heathen altar upon you, shall he offer the priests of the high places that burn incense upon you, and men's bones shall be burnt upon you. And he gave a sign, this man of God gave a sign the same day, saying, this is the sign. This is the sign for you now, Jeroboam. This is the sign which the Lord has spoken. Behold, the altar shall be rent, shall be torn open, and the ashes that are upon it shall be poured out. And it came to pass, when King Jeroboam heard the saying of the man of God, which had cried against the altar in Bethel, that he put forth his hand from the altar, and he pointed his hand to the man of God, saying, you know, likely saying to his bodyguards, lay hold on him. And his hand, Jeroboam's hand, which he put forth against him, dried up, so that he could not pull it in again to himself. The altar also was rent, it was torn open, and the ashes poured out from the altar according to the sign which the man of God had given by the word of the Lord. And this is amazing, brethren. Such detail, 300 years in advance, and even specifically naming Josiah. Specifically naming Josiah, which is virtually never done in prophecy. There's even more to that old account, and if you want to read it later, it's in 1 Kings chapter 13. You don't have to turn there now. We won't read that now. And you know the reason why this Jewish man of God, why he was buried in Bethel and not somewhere in his home kingdom of Judah. We don't have time to go into all of that today. So let's return now, brethren, to 2 Kings chapter 23 and to Josiah's time, where we find him again in that same cemetery in Bethel, and where he, Josiah, suddenly notices another grave marker. Another grave marker that was apparently somehow different from all the others. 2 Kings chapter 23, continuing now in verse 17. Verse 17, then he, Josiah, said, what title is that that I see? And the men of the city told him, it is the sepulchre of the man of God which came from Judah. You know, 300 years ago, and proclaim these things that you, Josiah, have done against the altar of Bethel. Verse 18, and he, Josiah, said, let him, you know, the body of the Jewish prophet, let him alone, let no man move his bones. So they left his bones alone with the bones of the prophet that came out of Samaria. And there was another associated and unnamed Samaritan prophet who was buried in that same cemetery in Bethel around that same time, 3 years earlier. And that's all that's included in that story, that continuing story in 1 Kings chapter 13. But let's continue now, still in 2 Kings chapter 23, because Josiah now continued with his cleansing work. Verse 19, and all the houses also of the high places that were in the cities of Samaria, the other cities of Samaria, which the kings of Israel, the northern tribes, had made to provoke the Lord to anger. And again, brethren, it was over and over again that these kings of Israel were slapping the Lord God in the face, almost purposely provoking him to anger. Josiah took it all away and did to them according to all the acts that he'd done in Bethel. Verse 20, and he slew all the priests of the high places. All of the high places, all of the buildings that were there upon the altars, and burned men's bones upon them, and returned to Jerusalem. And so, as Josiah's righteous cleansing work was then complete, he could then turn his mind and his efforts toward far more positive pursuits. And, you know, we saw before about the mention of unleavened bread. As they had arrived at the time of the first month of God's true new year, Josiah now made another proclamation from the words of the book of the law that the high priest Hilkiah had recently found. Verse 21. And the king commanded all the people, saying, "Keep the Passover. Keep the Passover unto the Lord your God, as it is written in the book of this covenant." And that's important, brethren, that those people of the Old Covenant people needed to keep the Passover as it was written in the book of the covenant. Let's see if they did. Verse 22. Surely there was not held such a Passover from the days of the judges that judged Israel, nor in all the days of the kings of Israel, nor of the kings of Judah. But in the 18th year of King Josiah, so what was he then, 2:8:16, he was only 26 years old. In the 18th year of King Josiah, wherein this Passover was held to the Lord in Jerusalem. Now, I want to look into more detail on the Passover, brethren. So let's go over to the parallel account of Josiah's reign in 2 Chronicles chapter 35. 2 Chronicles chapter 35, beginning in verse 1. 2 Chronicles chapter 35, verse 1. Moreover, Josiah kept the Passover unto the Lord in Jerusalem. And brethren, again, it was important that they keep it as written in the book of this covenant. So exactly when did they keep it? Did they keep it on the 15th day of the first month, as the Jews do today, brethren? And as the Jews have done for many centuries? Is that when they kept it? No. Josiah and his people kept it on the night that the Lord God commanded them to keep it. Still in verse 1. And they killed the Passover on the 14th day of the first month. The 14th day of the first month. Verse 2. And he, Josiah, set the priests in their charges, in their various Passover and Feast of Unleavened Bread responsibilities, and encouraged them to the service of the house of the Lord. Verse 3. And Josiah said unto the Levites that taught all Israel, which were holy unto the Lord. Now, brethren, there's an interesting side point just in that part of the verse there. It says, said unto the Levites that taught all Israel. That's interesting. It's worth remembering that it was the responsibility of one particular section of Levites to teach the people, and to teach the people most likely the religious branch of teaching, of course. But still, in verse 3, Josiah commanded these Levites, "Put the holy ark in the house which Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, did build." You know, why was this necessary? Why did the Ark of the Covenant need to be returned to the most holy place within the temple? I read up on it, and there seems to be at least three opinions on this. Number one, that The Ark of the Covenant had been removed by Josiah's evil father, Amon, and Amon had put a heathen idol in there, in the most holy place. Number two was that the Ark of the Covenant had been privately removed by one of the high priests at the beginning of Judah's idolatrous times and had it laid up in some secret storage place for its preservation. And the third one, the third opinion, is that the Ark of the Covenant had been removed by the order of Josiah himself at the beginning of the repairs of the most holy place. And of course it was precious and didn't want it to get damaged during those repairs. Whatever the reason was anyway, brethren, let's continue now in verse 3 with what Josiah said to these Levites. Still in verse 3, "It, the ark, shall not be a burden upon your shoulders. Serve now the Lord your God and his people Israel." So the ark was no longer to be carried from place to place, but was now once again returned to its proper fixed abode in the most holy place. And therefore, these teams of Levite bearers were again freed up to attend their other Passover responsibilities, serving the Lord and his people. Verse 4, "And prepare yourselves," this is Josiah speaking to the Levites, "prepare yourselves by the houses of your fathers after your courses, according to the writing of David, king of Israel, and according to the writing of Solomon," you know, in his good period. Verse 5, "And stand in the holy place, according to the divisions of the families of the fathers of your brethren, the people, and after the division of the families of the Levites." So, again, you don't have to turn there now, brethren, but back in chapters 23 and 24 of the first book of Chronicles, David had arranged for the various families of Levites to look after the spiritual welfare of the various families of the other tribes of Israel within their home tribal territories throughout the year, but then also from time to time to take courses or shifts at serving at the temple. So they throughout the year they would be serving the specified allocations of the Jewish and the other Israelite people throughout, but you know, a couple of times a year they were brought in to do a shift at the temple. Okay, now brethren, this is part of the Passover explanation here, but now we come to a somewhat uncertain section of this account of Josiah's reign. And I think he did a great job in restoring the Passover, but there's some doubt here as to the completeness of the accuracy of the arrangements at this time. And I think you'll understand as we go through it, there's a couple of issues here. So let's read it and let's think about it. And just a reminder before we start that from verse 3, Josiah was still talking to the Levites here. Verse 6. So, he's talking to the Levites, he's giving them an instruction. He's saying to the Levites, "Kill the Passover and sanctify yourselves and prepare your brethren," your brethren of the other tribes, you know, perhaps some instruction was necessary, Passover instruction, "that they may do according to the word of the Lord by the hand of Moses." Okay. Again, with regards to the Passover instructions, brethren. But please remember, brethren, that the Lord, through Moses, had instructed the Israelite people that the heads of households to kill and to prepare the Passover lambs themselves in their own homes. Okay? So let's continue for now. We'll come back to this point later as we go along. Verse 7. And Josiah gave to the people of the flock, lambs and kids, all for the Passover offerings, for all that were present, okay, present in the Jerusalem area at the Passover time, to the number of 30,000, gives you some idea of how many households there would have been. Okay, so these were lambs and kids, 30,000 of them, plus 3,000 bullocks for some other offerings. And these, all of these were of the king's substance. Wonderful, generous gifts from Josiah's personal flocks and herds. You know, the majority of the brethren may not have been prepared for Passover, and many of them may not have had the appropriate quality lambs or kids. Anyway, verse 8. And his princes, Josiah's princes, gave willingly unto the people, to the priests and to the Levites. And also Hilkiah the high priest, and Zechariah and Jehiel, these were the second level chief priests that we mentioned earlier, rulers of the house of God, gave unto the priests, gave unto the regular priests for the Passover. And it says offerings there, brethren, that word is not in there for the Passover offerings. The word offerings is not in there. 2,600, it says small cattle. Those words are not in there either, brethren. We understand that it's talking about 2,600 lambs or goats as well, and 300 oxen, again, for those other offerings that are mentioned. Verse 9, Conaniah also, and Shemaiah, and Nathaniel, his brethren, and Hashabiah, and Jael, and Jozabad, chief of the Levites. Again, there was high level in the Levites as well as in the priests, gave unto the regular Levites for Passover. And here we see that again, brethren, says offerings. No, nix that out of there. It's not, it doesn't say that. And 5,000 says small cattle. Nix that out of there as well. We think it's lambs or goats, and 500 oxen for those other offerings. No, so the service was prepared, and the priests stood in their place as commanded, and the Levites in their courses, in their shifts, according to the king's commanded. It says, according to the king's commandment, brethren, but as I believe here, not perfectly according to the Lord's commandment. Not according perfectly to the Lord's commandment. Okay? And here's why. And they, who's it talking about here? The priests and the Levites killed the Passover. And the priests sprinkled the blood from their hands, and the Levites flayed them. And they removed the burnt offerings that they might give according to the divisions of the families of the people to offer unto the Lord, as it is written in the book of Moses. And so did they with the oxen. Well, hopefully, brethren, but I'm not sure, that these burnt offerings and these oxen would have been for the Feast of Unleavened Bread and not for the Passover night. But again, brethren, although Josiah's reintroduction of the Passover was a very great thing, a very great thing to do, I got to ask the question, brethren, was it all done as is written, as was written in the book of Moses? And I'm not so sure that it was, brethren. Verse 13, and they, the Levites, brethren, not the family heads, roasted the Passover with fire, according to the ordinance. I don't think so. But the other holy offerings sod they in pots. They boiled in pots and in cauldrons and in pans, and that was okay for the later non-Passover offerings, and divided them speedily among all the people. Again, brethren, a little bit confusion as to the timing here, but it certainly does read like these other holy offerings that are being mentioned here, that they were being boiled on Passover night, or at best during Passover day. And brethren, I do not believe that that would have been right. There's just a word here that I looked up from sources on the internet there, just a word on where the Passover lambs were being killed and by whom. Again, the command all the way back in Exodus was for the family members to do it in their homes. And here's what happened. And again, here's from these sources. Passover observances began shifting from homes to the Jerusalem temple during the period of the monarchy, a gradual process that culminated around King Josiah's reforms in 622 BC. This trend was reversed after the temple's destruction in 70 AD, when the observance returned to homes to preserve the original commands. So, okay, verse 14, and afterward, after Passover night, they, the non-priestly Levites, made ready for themselves and for the priests, because the priests, the sons of Aaron, were busied in offering of the burnt offerings and fat until night. Believe that means until the sunset that began the holy day. Therefore the Levites prepared for themselves and for the priests, the sons of Aaron. So again, brethren, this reads like this preparation was being done on Passover day, and that was quite correct, brethren, because Passover day, Abib 14, is not a holy day per se, but rather is a day of preparation for the following day. The following day being the first holy day of the sacred year on Abib 15, the first day of unleavened bread. But there were some sections of the Levites who were not able to participate in the offerings because they were on duty. Verse 15. And the singers, the sons of Asaph, were in their place, according to the commandment of David, back in 1 Chronicles 25, and Asaph and Heman and Jeduthun, the king's seer or the king's prophet, and the porters or gatekeepers waited at every gate of the temple compound. They might not depart from their service, for, or rather so, their brethren, the Levites, their fellow Levites, prepared for them. So these Levites who were on duty, were adequately catered for. Verse 16. So, all the service of the Lord was prepared the same day, Abib 14, to keep the Passover. Okay, that's okay, to prepare the same day, the Passover, and to prepare and to offer burnt offerings upon the altar of the Lord. And maybe that is not okay, brethren. according to the commandments of King Josiah. But again, was it all done according to the commandments of the eternal God? And again, brethren, I've got to say, I'm not so sure, because the timing, as we read it in the King James Version, is grammatically very ambiguous. You know, it says here, the same day. Which was the same day mentioned here? Was it Abib 14? Or was it Abib 13? And while, you know, the scriptures do allow for some preparation work to be done prior to Passover night, you know, on Abib 13 and even earlier, the main preparation day for the holy day of the first day of unleavened bread, and especially for food preparation for the holy day, was and still is Abib 14, Passover day. You know, we prepare any major cooking for the holy days and for the weekly Sabbaths should be done on the day before. The day before the first day of unleavened bread is Passover day. But the King James Version grammar here implies that there might have been burnt offerings being offered in the temple during Abib 14, in addition to the Passover lamb sacrifices. And as I understand it, brethren, there is no command for any such additional sacrifices on Passover day. The later Jews did initiate this much later, and they came up with what is actually an unscriptural command, and it's called Haggigah, if you wanted to look it up, or Chagigah. It's H-A-G-I-G-A-H, Haggigah, or it could have a C on the front of it there. And it comes from the unscriptural Jewish books called the Mishnah or the Talmud, which were written, and this particular Haggigah command of the Jews came from sometime between the 4th and 6th centuries AD, brethren, and not from true scripture. Okay, so these additional offerings were not according to God's will, not according to God's command. But to give Josiah's Jews the benefit of the doubt, maybe this ambiguous verse is saying that the preparation of the burnt offerings on Abib 14 was for the actual offering on the following day, the holy day, Abib 15, the first day of unleavened bread. Verse 17, and the children of Israel that were present kept the Passover at that time, okay, on the night that began Abib 14, and the feast of unleavened bread 7 days from Abib 15 to Abib 21, just as Jesus and his disciples did, just as the early Church of God members did, and just as God's people do today. Verse 18, and there was no Passover like to that kept in Israel from the days of Samuel the prophet, neither did all the kings of Israel, including the kings of Judah, of course, keep such a Passover as Josiah kept, and the priests, and the Levites, and all Judah and Israel that were present, and including the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Of course, the vast majority of northern Israelites could not attend because most of them had been taken into captivity by the Assyrians. But many years before the Assyrian captivity, some northern Israelites had defected into Judah, and so their northern Israelite descendants would have been there at Josiah's Passover. In addition to the Jews and the northern Israelites who lived in or near Jerusalem, there probably were many others who travelled to Jerusalem for this Passover, just as many others continued to do in later years, and notably including Jesus and Jesus' family and Jesus' disciples who travelled to the temple in Jerusalem every year. Final verse for today, brethren. In the 18th year of the reign of Josiah was this Passover kept, and Josiah was only, 27 or 28 at that time, brethren. Still a very young man. So, brethren, we still have just one small part of Josiah's life and reign to cover. But we're out of time for today. I think we've gone a little bit over time. So we'll have to leave that section until our next episode, part 105, in 2 weeks' time.